I just heard the opening of a Lucky Energy. So Ted Johnson's getting ready for his three-point stance. I say glasses are on. He's got the you're looking very professorial today with the zippered sweater and the glasses.
I don't know how many. Sports scholar.
Yeah, a sports scholar. That's what we'll call him. Because I don't know how many professors drink Lucky Energy before they go to the lectern.
All the good ones.
Do they?
Yeah.
If I go down to Harvard, there's a lot of professors before they hit the lectern.
You know what you're not going to see at Harvard next year? International students.
Why?
Because the United States just banned them from enrolling them.
Really? Jeez, I missed
that. How about that? Just letting you know how things are going outside our rainy radio box.
Is that all schools or just Harvard?
Just Harvard.
I was going to say my son might have a chance to go to a better school. Open up some slots for kids.
Laughing through the discomfort.
Ted's here. Ted's not quite ready, I've noticed. And I was usually like, hey, Ted, how you doing? He's like, I'm great, buddy. So we'll just move right on. It's time for the three-point stance.
319!
180!
319!
319! Yeah, there you go!
What's up,
Ted?
It's the three-point stance.
I'm going to count to three.
Tatum puts up a three. Bam!
Easy as one, two, three.
Pasternak, a hat trick, and a 4-3 Boston lead.
Three.
And it is gone! A three-run homer, and the game is tied.
On WEEI Afternoons.
Oh, so now I get to be the one to welcome Ted Johnson onto the program today. How you doing, Ted?
What's up, Daniel? How we doing, boys? Good to see everybody.
There he is. The professor. Big Ted.
Nice to hear you here. Nice to have you here.
Nice to be here, guys.
Ted, thank you.
We begin the three-point stance here on WEEI Afternoons, which is brought to you each and every day by Jeffrey Glassman Injury Lawyers, Boston's go-to injury attorney for over 30 years. If you've been hurt in a car or work accident, or you lied to WEEI Afternoons about Garrett Crochet, you got to get Glassman, and here's what you do. You call all sevens. This is for you, Alex Cora, at 617-777-7777, and if not, Andy will come down and find you. As it is 3 o'clock here on WEEI Afternoons, we have three hosts, each of which will present their stance on the biggest stories in the world of sports today. Each host will get 60 seconds or thereabouts to present their opening stance, after which we will open up for discussion on each. Our order is Andy Hart, then Nick Fitzy-Stevens, then Ted Johnson. Andy, you will lead us off. Are you ready?
Indeed.
All right, your 60 seconds begin right now.
So our guy SGA and the Thunder, as Ted likes to call them.
Thunder!
He's got his own little drop.
They look unbeatable.
They look great, and the East looks very beatable. Everybody in the East looks beatable. The 60-win Celtics, already gone. The 60-win Cavs, already gone. And you got this very competitive, fun series between the Pacers and the Knicks left. And I think SGA, off his MVP award, having a historic season in both scoring for himself but leading the team to victory. They pulled away from the Wolves in game one, blew them out. I think they are going to cruise to the NBA title. I think you are watching the beginning of a dynasty. I just think all this, the Knicks were lucky to beat the Celtics in some sense. I think the Pacers were lucky to beat the Knicks last night. They can play their little luck gag battle or choke on each other for as long as they want.
Oh, I see where you're going.
But guess what?
Wouldn't matter.
Then they're going to... The Celtics should have been in the finals, but that's a side topic. Now you are just going to be fodder for the lion that is the Thunder, and they are going to win the title. And then my dream scenario is they trade one of the 12 first-round picks they still have, or a few of them, for Giannis. So they win a title, they get Giannis, and the dynasty isn't budding in Boston. The dynasty is budding in Oklahoma.
Interesting.
Thunder!
Ew.
It is so, I'm curious why you would say Giannis to the Thunder, though.
Because it seems like he wants out, and they're considering out. They have all the first-round picks. He already plays in a minor market.
And it's a system fit.
Yes.
It's all they do is drive downhill, yes. Drive downhill.
Oh,
drive
I think it would be a great fit. And I think from an NBA perspective, if they win the title and then trade for the perennial MVP candidate who also already has a championship, that's good for business.
Who's that?
That measuring stick.
That'll give us the dynasty that we have been talking about that can't burgeon during parity because it's so difficult in the NBA.
We in Boston thought a dynasty was going to be born this year. We're a lot like Ricky Prohl. We were right, but we were wrong. A dynasty was born. Wow. But it's not the Celtics. It's born in OKC with the Thunder.
Sam Presti, who got fleeced in that James Harden deal, has been nothing but a genius ever since. So You got to be impressed with that team. They built that from the ground up, man.
Yes.
Those aren't free agents.
From the ashes of departure with Russell Westbrook and Kevin Durant just bailing on them in the middle of the night.
Yep.
They've built two dynasties in a way, even though that one was never won anything.
This is a pretty damn good team.
But that's a dynastic trio.
It was the Paul George. You know how there's always these trades that people make that are like, that's big reset. Herschel Walker, obviously the most famous one. The Paul George trade really rebooted that franchise.
Yeah.
Celtics trade of KG and Paul Pierce rebooted this one.
And now they're going to reap the fruits, baby. The title is theirs. It's just now play the games out because it's coming.
Interesting.
All right, we'll table that for the time being. Adam Silver doesn't look at that at a big enough market. He's going
to
force.
Can't love that.
Get ready to speak country, baby.
That's right. If it's not Golden State or Chicago, I don't want to hear it. All right, let's move on. Fitzy, are you ready?
I am indeed.
All right, well, your 60 seconds do indeed begin right now.
Stiz, thank you very much. As you all heard, NFL players have been voted to be allowed to play in United States Olympic flag football in 2028. I read earlier today an article on The Ringer where they suggested the ultimate flag football team composed of NFL players, and it featured players like Kyle Hamilton, Justin Jefferson, Mike Evans, Bijan Robinson, T. Higgins, Amon-Ra St. Brown, Travis Hunter, Fred Warner, and the quarterback, Kyler Murray. Probably because of his fleet-footed nature, his ability to evade, good size arm, etc.
Who says this?
This was on The Ringer. A lot of people also think that maybe it should be Lamar Jackson, but I just want to take a few seconds here to say the only choice for quarterback of the United States Olympic flag football team is someone who has not thrown a meaningful pass in the National Football League in years. The greatest of all time, Mr. America, Captain America himself, Tom Brady needs to be at least an honorary captain, if not the quarterback of the Olympic team. Nothing would sell faster than those jerseys, and the rest of the world would bow to his greatness.
And then we'd lose in the Olympics.
That is interesting. Well, can I come out of retirement to play in it?
Of course you could.
I guess I could.
So, Ted, it's 5x5, okay? And it's 5x5. It's all passing, to the best of my knowledge. And you can blitz two.
What does that mean, 5x5? Oh, so it's five against five?
5 against 5.
That's it. They don't have 7.
It's not 6x6. It's not 7x7. It's 5x5.
Okay.
I don't think
they have run stuffing middle linebackers.
No, and they also don't have.
Sorry, Ted.
You're gonna have to put Ted
Johnson. Fred Warner.
Damn! There goes Johnson off the field again.
Do we put Fred Warner in or Johnson? Okay.
Hold on. We got a perfect matchup. T. Higgins is 1-on-1 against Ted Johnson.
All right, this is your segment. I didn't mean to.
It's quite all right. I mean,
it's a quarterback.
There's already been a lot of pushback because people think you need to get an evasive, fleet-footed quarterback because you can blitz up to two of those five guys. To which I say, okay. Ooh. But who is better at picking apart the blitz, even if he hasn't thrown a meaningful pass in years, than Tom Brady?
It's a fair point. No, I do think his accuracy would be great. But typically you like an athletic quarterback, and it's that
blend. You know who it's going to be? Yeah. It's probably going to be Jaden Daniels. No, Jaden Daniels should be the quarterback.
Patrick Mahomes looks fat. You see his dad, Bud?
He does. Every offseason, it's good humor and Bud Light. And I don't mean jokes.
I don't
want
to tell Paige who she should get as her next client for Awaken 180.
I'm curious.
Imagine that. Tom Brady in a USA Olympic 12 jersey representing this country on the greatest stage.
They try to get. Is there film on these countries?
Exactly.
We need to get somebody to look in on the Chinese.
Ernie Adams is the special assistant.
We need Ernie in.
It would be so fun. At least pick two quarterbacks and put them on the roster.
That is.
He comes out of retirement,
he's
Andy.
The backup quarterback?
Doesn't matter. He just want to be there. Make him
the
coach.
First time.
Yeah,
it'll
true.
Be fun to watch that. I will be.
You're going to get into it. Yeah.
I'll get into it.
NFL is hooking you, people.
I'm a big fan of flag football. I played flag football before I played real football, to be honest. So,
If Ted Johnson likes flag football, flag football's coming, baby.
It's coming then? Okay, very good.
It's my favorite thing to coach. It's the most fun, so let's go.
Man, can you imagine his classmates in middle school looking at him across the line playing flag football? That's a mental image.
Also dominated. Saying, thank God he can only pull my flag.
Dominated. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Did you ever tackle anybody?
No, but kids went crying, you know. They were crying to moms.
Wait, because you pulled their flag?
We were rough.
Oh, I figured.
We had a big team of good athletes. And
light contact? The kind of thing where you can block and push a little bit.
You pull that flag, but you know you can push him too. I'm sorry, you went down.
That's not his flag you pulled.
But the flag came out. Sorry, you landed on the ground.
You were a bully on the flag football field.
If you were built like him, wouldn't you be?
I would just go bully on the real football field.
Which he did when he won his three
That'll
Super Bowls.
That'll be interesting, though. Mm-hmm. All right, Dan.
All right, let's move on. And, Ted, we are moving to your three-point stand. So are you ready?
I'm ready, bud.
All right, your 60 seconds begin right now.
All right, so I already talked this a little bit, workshopped this with Daniel Ball. So this is interesting, guys. We are 37 days out. 37 days out since the Boston Bruins have played their last hockey game, okay? And yet, still, no coach, no head coach for the Boston Bruins. There are 8 new head coaches already that have been hired in the NHL this offseason or during the season. I heard Don Sweeney has been quoted recently as saying that the new head coach will be hired in plenty of time before the NHL draft. You know what? The NHL draft is like, you know, June 27th, so not too far from now. Supposedly, reports are they have interviewed up to 15 candidates for the head coaching position already. Does that sound familiar?
Yep.
Sounds like as many offensive coordinator candidates as the Pat interviewed last year.
That and also general managers to the Red Sox.
Yep.
Okay. So, and then also, the kind of the theme of the Boston Bruins is that the players love playing here, right? Nobody wants to leave here. Everyone wants to stay here. Brad Marchand didn't want to leave, but yet they're having a hard time finding coaches. So this dynamic of players want to play here, but yet coaches don't want to come here. Something's not good with that organization. They are looked at differently than they may have been in the past with the power structure of Don Sweeney, Cam Neely, and that has me worried. 37. Can you imagine if the Patriots didn't have a head coach for 37 days? I'm surprised that this story is kind of as underreported as it is, but this is a big deal. The Bs got to get their act together, man.
The Patriots didn't have a head coach for 347 days.
Oh,
well,
wow.
Shots fired.
That's
tough.
That's not okay.
I don't sign off on that.
It's not wrong. It's just tough.
Wow. So, Ted, let's stick with this for a minute. Do you think it is the power structure, just that? Because there's been rumors. We talked about that the other day when they announced the Don Sweeney extension.
Yeah.
Some people read that as, oh, they can't find a coach. They got to extend him to at least pretend there's a stable working environment.
That was only a few days ago, right?
Yeah. But the flip side, I would also say, is there any chance people looked at last season and how they handled Jim Montgomery and said, I'm not sure I want to be part of that.
Yeah.
They railroaded that guy. They ran that guy out of town. He had 2 great years. They wouldn't give him an extension. When it predictably went bad, they canned him.
Yeah, they didn't extend him. Okay, so he reluctantly goes into his walk year. The team isn't doing good. They fire him. Then he goes over to St. Louis, and you see what he did for St. Louis. So that has got to be on the minds of any of these candidates that are out there right now. So
Cassidy, the same thing. But, you railroad him. He goes and wins.
There you go.
So you're saying, Ted, that they're basically establishing a toxic front office. Or the problems in the front office and their poor handling of management.
It's the perception of it. It's whether it is or it isn't, I'm not sure. But my guess is that the perception is that that's not a secure place to go be a head coach at. When you look at Don Sweeney and Cam, they're one and the same. I'm sorry. I think Cam has hitched his wagon to Don Sweeney. I do. Even though I think Cam at the end of the day has more power than Don, clearly, I just think Cam has no interest in letting go of Don. And so the coach is going to know that sees the pattern of that and says, why would I want to go there when I'm going to be the first to go? It's not going to be one of the players, and it's not going to be one of the front office people. It's going to be me.
Could players be involved? And what I mean by that is, if I'm a candidate looking, because there were reports that Sullivan, they had talked to Mike Sullivan, mm-hmm. Tockett, they mm-hmm. were involved. Those guys chose other opportunities.
Yep.
Some of us look at Swayman and go, you gave him a lot of money for a long time. Is he really a franchise goalie? If I'm a coach, I would be assessing some
looking
of that.
Looking at that, too.
Like, mm-hmm. am I stuck with that guy?
Yeah.
Because that means I'll be out of a job in 2 years.
Look at the free agents they brought in, paid a lot of money.
A lot of money.
Same thing. It just feels as if that, you know, they want to frame it as a reboot, or not a reboot, yeah, a retool.
Yep.
But it's more than that. And you can tell us till you're blue in the face that that's the case when, you know, we're not dummies. We all see it. And clearly, NHL coaching candidates know that better than we do. So they're looking at all that. Just 37 days and 15 candidates interviewed, yet the Bruins, the Boston freaking Bruins,
yep.
don't have a head coach. That is, to me, is alarming and very telling at the same time.
And, you know, Fitzy, you made the joke about sounds like the offensive coordinator interviews with the Patriots, and what did they end up with? No disrespect to Alex Van Pelt, the man. I actually liked the man. But you ended up with a guy who had been in the league for 15 years and not been asked to be an offensive coordinator. You didn't exactly get the hottest candidate, the rising star.
Poor guy who who seemed like he did the best he could and had a decent season, but was not treated terribly well, and I don't think liked it very much around here either.
And what do we think about Breslow? I mean, it's starting to kind of like, how this season has started off, it's like.
A lot of people don't like him now. A lot of people wonder who the first baseman should have been behind Tristan Casas.
And he wasn't the Red Sox first, second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, 11th, 12th, 13th, 14th, 15th
People were turning them down at an alarm. Remember the woman? Kelly, I don't know how to say it, NG, I believe.
Clarkson.
No, NG, I believe, is her last name.
Okay.
So
Kelly Ng.
Yeah, okay.
Oh,
we'll go
with that. Yeah.
She, like, people that you would think, Kim Ng, sorry. I knew it was a K name. You were getting people that you would think, oh, the Boston Red Sox, that's a great franchise. The history, the
she flat out turned them down, right?
Yeah, there were a lot of those. And
she's very well-respected front office.
That's when you start looking into second and third tier candidates. And that doesn't mean the next coach can't be good. He could be a young guy that hasn't gotten the opportunity, whatever. But you're not exactly, you know, fishing in your top pool.
I got an in-show poll question for you. What'll happen first? Coach of the Bruins, first baseman for the Red Sox?
It's probably the coach of the Bruins, but
probably coach of the Bruins.
My guess.
Ted's right.
Sad.
37. This proves you a little bit. No disrespect to the Bruins and Dale Arnold, who used to fight with me on their popularity.
And here comes disrespect.
I mean, Ted's right. If any of the other three teams went 37 days without a coach, it would be like
huge
top
news.
Like, how can they not get a coach?
Every
this
day.
This is just sort of under the radar. I'm sure the niche hockey fans are kind of freaking out or talking about it, but if this were the Patriots or something, they go like 4 or 5 days a week, and it's like, what's going on? Who are they getting? Who are they interviewing?
They went 1 hour removed from the season before letting everyone know they didn't like that one and had to go get a new one.
That is true.
An hour.
It's an interesting situation, and it is not – because I actually think – I've made this argument to you, Ted. Superficially, you can look at the Bruins with some optimism and say – they got $29 million in cap space. They have a franchise goalie, a franchise scorer, a franchise defenseman. They have the 7th pick in the draft. They have a couple young prospects. They got all these trades. You can kind of spin it like there should be some pieces for a retool or a turnaround.
Yeah.
But hockey people apparently are not doing that. They're looking at it and like, if I get a better chance, I'm going to the better chance because you're not that attractive now.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's scary.
Yeah. And you can flip that. And Dan, you can help me on this. You flip that on the other way, too. It's like, your goalie was one of the worst goalies in the NHL. And so that contract looks like an albatross.
Yep.
They got a bunch of picks for the NHL draft. But do you want that general manager making the picks? Have you seen his?
He's due.
Okay. All right.
You yourself have said that that's not a principle that you can rely on in sports.
He always uses that as an argument.
If I'm trying to win an argument,
let's go. Tenth time is the charm this year.
He can't be that bad. Can he swing and miss that many? I mean, he has, but.
I mean, Dan, what do you think about my, like, do you think it's 37 days? I mean.
It's alarming that an original six franchise that won a cup in 2011 that's been to multiple cups in the last decade has had multiple high-profile coaching candidates say, you guys, I'm going to the Rangers who are on their way down. I'm going to the Flyers who are a mess and other teams that should be below you. It's very alarming.
Just proving once again that every device under the sun is always listening to you. I never get hockey tweets, rarely ever show up on my timeline, Ted. It's usually all football and nonsense. But here's a Pierre LeBrun tweet that just pops up talking about how the coaching search is going to come to an end and that it's going to be what next week maybe and all this other stuff. Everyone's always listening. No, but it's just funny, like
a merciful end.
Yeah. Right. I mean, do we think that that's legitimate or do we think that maybe that's the front office trying to push some info out there? Like we got to get the Ted Johnsons and the other people off our back because we're making a mockery of this entire organization.
It'll come to an end. As Ted said, like the draft is coming, like you're going to move towards, you know, in the NFL version, it's, well, we got to get ready for the combine and we got to start our scouting and we got to, like, you need to have a coach in place, right? Or if you don't, it just proves more and more that the coach is irrelevant and it's just the Neely and Sweeney show and the coach is just sort of a bystander in their bigger picture of the organization.
Yeah.
And
what,
I don't think that's
what
good.
What coaching candidate wants to come here when you hire him 2 days before the draft and don't ask his opinion
desperate
on the drafter?
A desperate one. Either a guy who's looking for his last shot. You know, he thinks he, you know, the last time he got fired, he thought it was the last time he was going to get fired. He's looking for his last shot. Or a young one who's just saying, there's only so many of those jobs in the world. I'll take it. I'll take the opportunity, cross my fingers, and hope that the Swayman gets back to being a good goalie, not a bad goalie, and all the other guys, you know, kind of play to their contracts.
And one last point, just reading from a Steve Conroy article in the Boston Herald about this. When he was asked, Sweeney was, about, well, are you waiting for any candidates that are currently coaching in the Stanley Cup playoffs? He said no. No, we're not.
Rafi Devers did? No.
And then he points out that Dallas assistant Misha Donskoff is a highly, highly touted, young, up-and-coming coach who's the assistant to the Dallas Stars head coach. And so
no.
But no, we're not.
No, we don't. We're not interested in highly touted.
We don't want those.
Up-and-coming.
Don't need those.
We might accidentally win if we hired somebody like that. We might turn this thing around quicker than we expected. That's going to do it for the three-point stance here on WEEI Afternoons. We might revisit some of those topics a little later, especially the NBA, where there was a crazy basketball game last night.
We got to talk about that game today.
And I also like the choke job gesture. I think that plays into Lindor on second base.
He got lucky, though.
I like
it's
all
historical.
These. He did get a little bit lucky.
He got lucky, but it's still great.
It's still dinky, but I love it.
I know, but like
makes sense. I'm a
31
dink.
Years later, same place.
Yes.
I mean,
love
it's
it.
Just beautiful.
You usually wait for the game
symmetry
winner. You might want to make sure it's a three next
still,
time.
They get
with Reggie in the building.
You flipped a bird to karma and you still won.
Still
but,
won.
Good job,
you
Pacers.
You got to love that.
We'll talk about that a little bit later. But up next here on WEEI Afternoons, as is the case every Thursday, 3:30, Tom Curran talking Patriots OTAs, Drake May, and all things New England football next on WEEI.
You asked for a liar rejoin. You got it.
You know who's a liar is the guy in the Twitch chat who said this is a good song. This is terrible.
How dare you? It's Megadeth.
Yikes.
Yeah, I don't like it.
That's real soothing.
I'd rather listen to Alex Cora lie to me than listen to this song about lying.
Oh, we got
to
get to that.
Oh, we'll get to that, Ted. Don't you worry. There's more meat.
Bill Belichick lied to you all the time, and you just ate it up. Oh, just
always
ate it
Bill
up.
With you. Bill. Talk about Alex. We're also talking to our buddy Tom E. Curran. He's joining us on the phone right now, and he is brought to you by Drains by James, Eastern Mass's leader in residential and commercial drain cleaning and pipelining at drainsbyjames.com. At Drains by James, they give a poop about your pipes. Tommy Curran, do you give a poop about the fact that Drake May threw 4 interceptions the other day?
Yes, I do. And the reason is, look, they're not going out there and working out and practicing just for the fun of it. I mean, you want to have every single rep executed well. And you can have mitigating circumstances on each one. One was a miscommunication, one was a bad throw, one where it was a pull. Who cares? You know what? If the rep wasn't good, you are well within your rights as a coaching staff and as a quarterback yourself to say, that's way beneath what I should be expecting of myself. Don't excuse it. Don't wave it away. Don't say it's May. Don't say it's only practice. Don't say it's only OTAs. Expect more from yourself. And I think that that is going to be, we're going to talk about this on Boston Sports tonight this evening as a little preview.
Like
I really want to see how Drake May reacts to the heat being turned up. And as I said in one of our show emails, he's about to get the Tatum treatment, where people expect a lot from a third overall pick and perhaps a franchise savior type player. And is he ready for it? Is he ready to be called out? Is he ready for people to flip out about 4 picks at an OTA? Because he's not Mac Jones and he's not Joe Milton. He's the third overall pick, and everybody has thrown bouquets and sung hosannas and hallelujahs since he got here. And they want to return on the potential. So that, I think, is very interesting to watch unfold.
Love this. I just love it. I love that stance, Tom. I mean, that's – I mean, let's go. I mean, that's every rep is valuable, even if it's in May. So I love that. What is your take? I've been listening to you and Phil, and I can't remember if it was you or Phil that mentioned that – the playbook, Josh McDaniels, is not really holding back, that it doesn't feel like it's trimmed down, or I think maybe one of you guys were referencing something that Hunter Henry said about that. What is your take about just Josh McDaniels behind the scenes with Drake May, and what, you know, how is he, what is he throwing at him? Is it too much? Mm-hmm. Is it, what's your take on that?
First on the playbook, to hear Hunter Henry tell it, they're basically going to run the things that they ran in 2021. I'm sure that Josh is going to reach across the aisle to make sure that it's user-friendly for guys like Drake May. But I think what Phil was referencing was you saw three tight ends, you saw wide zone, you saw gap runs, you saw duo, all this other stuff that Phil gets all excited about, and I'm sure you do too, Teddy. Hoss. So, and Phil's just, wow, you know, all this stuff in. And it's not in. They're just running it. And last year, as we watched, it was a lot of wide zone, and Alex Van Pelt during minicamp. And again, I defend Alex Van Pelt. He was in a bad situation, and they wanted to rebuild and build up a young player. All they did was friggin' footwork. Quarterback drops and footwork in the early stages because they were trying to build from friggin' zero. But Josh has them much further ahead. I don't know whether too much is being thrown at Drake May or not. I think he's mentally tough. I think he's sharp. I think he is resilient. I think just based upon the testimony given by all his teammates and coaches, he wants to learn. So even if he is having a difficult time in any facet, and I don't know that he is, just keep pouring it on and he'll catch up. What'll be interesting to me, all of us as having spent time in classrooms, does Josh go as fast as the fastest or majority of learners? Or does he slow down for the stragglers? Or does he say, you know what, we're going to move you down to the UFL?
Wow. So, Tommy, you have talked about a renewed sense of urgency and uptick in energy for quite a while now, basically ever since Vrabel said yes to the dress and came back as the 16th coach of the franchise in January. Taking like a broader view of OTAs and how things are moving now, do you still see that same energy? Do you still see the same urgency? And what's just your general feel of the overall vibe down there this week?
I do. I see much greater urgency, a lot of demands. You know, they're running full speed on a few different drills. There was a pursuit drill, an angle pursuit drill. I saw guys like Christian Barmore. Some of the players stood out to me. He had almost perfect attendance. The only guys who weren't there were generally dealing with injuries or personal situations like Ramondre Stevenson in a grieving period. They had virtually everybody there. There was no Devon Godshaw home kicking rocks. There was no, you know, drama with whoever there was drama with last year. Who the hell was it?
Judon.
They're just up and running. So I feel that they're responding to the urgency that Vrabel has brought. And this lack of urgency really dates back. Come on. I mean, honestly, I'm going to do it again. It really dates back to like 2017 and 18. Mm-hmm. You know, just put it off. Well, Tom, we're going to chase Tom's ass out of here. Well, what's our succession plan? Well, we don't have one really. Okay. Well, we're going to lose Josh McDaniels. What's our succession plan? What's the rush? It's minicamp. Phil Perry, what are you, an idiot? Why are you asking us who's going to be the play caller in minicamp? You think we call plays in minicamp? What are you, an idiot? It's just that kind of tenor of non-urgency and we'll figure it out when it reveals itself has vanished. And last year being a prime example, too, the entire franchise basically calling it a foundational year to mulligan. You can't have that. Can you tell I did it at the gym? I was 40 minutes on the bike. Jesus. I had a little C4.
I noticed.
I just been shooting
around. Lucky energy.
It's
on this
Andy Hart-esque, actually, right now, which is impressive.
Yeah, I'm going to collapse on the other side of this.
Holy Moses, the crash is going to be spectacular. Tommy Curran, NBC Sports Boston. So, Tom, I think there's a couple positions we all believe/hope they're going to be better at on offense. That's O-line, the offensive line and wide receiver. But there's still a lot of bodies and moving parts at both of those positions. Did we get a little early?
Is this a two-part question?
Sampling? I don't know. What am I, John Dennis? Jeez. Did we get a little early sampling in OTAs of maybe how that's going to play out? And Pop Douglas, was I premature a year when I said 100 catches for him?
Might have been. No, you're right on, baby. You're right on.
Suck on that, Ted.
He was the one who was most excited, Ted, about what Josh will bring to the offense. I really think that Josh is going to try to feature him as much as he can do. Great. And if he breaks down, good. That's wrong.
Wow.
If he breaks down, Efton Jenkins comes in. You know, somebody who's been on the practice.
Chisholm, you mean?
Chisholm.
Yeah, and by the way, Phil Perry.
Who the hell is Efton Jenkins?
I don't know.
You went to school with him or something, probably.
And by the way, Phil, can you tell the senator, tell Phil Perry to calm down? His Efton Chisholm excitement is off the charts. My God.
See a doctor.
Get a room, guys.
She stands out.
I was going to make a filthy pun. but I think it's fun to watch these guys embrace their new roles. I do think that Mario Douglas will do that. What I'm curious is, you know, I think that most of us, or most people, not me included, because I don't think Cole Strange is an absolute disgrace to the game of football. I really don't.
I agree with
He's
you.
He's had occasions yep. where he played at a capable level.
Yeah.
Not a Pro Bowl level, but he was a decent enough starter. He's been victimized by dealing with a really bad patella injury for 2 years. He did not have surgery on it in 2023. He did have surgery on it in 2024. He's not a slouch. There's a guy who could help. Caden Wallace was pretty good when he was out there, except for the ankle. Layden Robinson shouldn't be a stiff. So those are things that I look at for the depth that, as we all do in friggin' May, oh, this guy looks good. You know who looked good the other day to me, even though it was a limited participation? Jalen Polk, which is the same thing I would do every year with Tyquan Thornton.
Hmm? Yep.
Huh, yeah, that I just
every year.
Yeah, the dog looking at you sideways. Hmm, really? Okay. I want to do a two part.
Come on!
Just like Andy does all the time. But how's the fourth overall pick looking? I mean, I don't know. Will Campbell starter day one. He should probably be the starter there for the next 12 years. I don't know. People are talking about his narrow shoulders. He looks like a pear.
They really are.
Yeah. So
that jumps out at you. Phil and I talked about that on the pod, and Phil said, you know, you're really a body type guy. And I do. I think body types are really interesting, honestly. I mean, I've read a lot of interesting books reflective of body types. There's a book called The Sports Gene by David Epstein, which I found really interesting. You know, the best athletes in the world have skinny ankles.
Yeah.
And narrow calves. And you can look it up.
It's true. And, there's truth to that.
You know, the best swimmers have long-ass bodies and short legs because their body acts as a Hulk. Mm-hmm. Fascinating book. Tremendously politically incorrect, I think, in this day and age. But it's fascinating to read because, you know, he has evidence to back things up. But when you look at Will Campbell, just on first blush, his shoulders are 20 to 25% more narrow than everybody else along the offensive line. And they were in shell-type pads. But his shoulders are very normal size narrow, meaning normal human narrow.
Right,
which leads to probably a little bit of the wingspan situation. If your shoulders are closer to your neck as opposed to further away, then your arms are going to be a little shorter. How does his unbelievably sophisticated, athletic, well-developed, and solid lower body compensate for any upper body limitations? And how does his mind work? And how does his first step work? All that stuff, as you guys know, is going to matter. And I really like listening to Morgan Moses talk about how much he liked him. Garrett Bradbury, the center from Minnesota, who's come in. You know, they're very positive about him. So all I can tell you is, what did I see from Will Campbell? I can see why scouts and analysts will look at him and say, wow, he doesn't have a normal build for a franchise left tackle. I can see it. So we'll see if he refutes it.
Milton Williams put a story on Instagram of him battling against Will Campbell, saying that, you know, they had a little dogfight out there, which was also good. So it's nice to see that he's getting a little respect from the teammates as well. I did want to end on another positive note, Tom. I did a podcast this morning with your pal, Mego, and she said, while cozying up to you and chatting down there the other day, you said to her, see that over there? Look at that. Look how good Barmore looks. If Christian Barmore really does look better and he's feeling healthier, do we really have the chance for like a good old-fashioned classic Patriots defensive line again?
Absolutely, you have the potential. I mean, Keon White, don't want to take him at 17. Got him at whatever in the second round.
38, yeah.
And he's shown why he would be looked at that way. He's a very smart kid. He's got a temperament that would, I think, if channeled the right way, be unbelievably solid. Vrabel might be the kind of guy to be able to channel that because he's so smart. He's one of those guys, Ted. Remember the guys who used to score too high in the Wunderlich and people are like, oh, we don't need these smart guys, independent thinkers. I think Keon White's a very smart and intelligent guy, and he wants to know the why of things. And we saw that last year. We would sit in the post game and talk about, is he freelancing out there? Is he trying to make a play? Mm-hmm. And probably he was because he's like, we suck. If I don't try to make plays, we're just going to lose again. So hopefully they can channel that tremendous resource and make it good. Milton Williams is Milton Williams. Barmore is a ridiculously good player and hasn't even scratched the surface. He should be a Pro Bowl level player, and he looked great.
And then I really like, every time I turn on Harold Landry and we all talk about what the worst offseason signing was, or the most questionable at least, was either him or Carlton Davis. And if you just watch Harold Landry get off the ball last year, coming off the defensive left, offensive right, it's like he's shot out of a friggin' cannon. If anybody out there remembers Ricochet Racers, he comes out like a Ricochet Racer. Nobody remembers.
Ricochet, nope. I remember Ricochet Rabbit, yes.
You don't remember Ricochet Racers, though?
No.
Nope.
They were a toy. I'm going to send you the link.
Okay.
I want to link to that book, actually, if you don't mind.
I'm actually more interested in the book
as well.
I'm
curious about that book. Yeah. So if you,
what if you're shaped like a Florida avocado? Does that help?
Oh, fascinating.
Yeah, what was it's I made for?
About, hard work.
There you go. Yep.
All right, Tom.
You really were.
He's a pack mule, exactly.
Made for hard work.
Go find a couch because you're going to crash soon. You're coming down off the gym high, the energy drink high.
Ready to work in, though.
You gave us a good hit here. So we'll talk to you next week. A little more Patriots OTAs, right?
Thanks, bud.
All right, yeah. We'll have another one. Okay, kids.
Stay back. Tom Curran, NBC Sports Boston, breaking down body types for us.
Efton Jenkins.
I love it.
Yeah, Efton Jenkins, making up names of players that don't exist.
That's after a workout when you're starving and you're like lightheaded.
You may not have forgotten you had to do this.
Again.
That's what that interview was. God bless it. He got through it.
But he did a great job, and he thinks good things are coming for DeMario Douglas. Great minds think alike. We'll talk a little bit about that and some other Patriots nuggets next here on WEEI Afternoons. That was Tom E. Curran. A few moments ago here on WEEI Afternoons. Is this a Ted Johnson request?
No.
Because you're singing right along.
This is old school country.
It's the Eagles. Everybody knows this.
This is good stuff.
Not everybody.
Wait, you don't know this song? Andy, this is one of the biggest songs of like the last 50 years.
I said country. It has a country feel, but it's the, classic.
Eagles Greatest Hits Volume classic 1 is still a top 5 selling album of all time.
That's unreal, okay. Man. Okay, all right. We won't have to bully me.
Sorry to bother you, Andy. Our bad.
I have to just say thank you, Tom Curran, for answering that question the way he did, because it felt like a lot of the teams around here, we're going to get there. Just have patience. Enough of this patience. Like, let's have one. I don't know.
Save that, Stiz. Enough with this patience.
Enough of this patience stuff. Let's have some urgency.
Right. I agree.
And so, look, they did made a lot of decisions this offseason to help their quarterback. And if he goes out there and he has a bad performance in practice, it makes everybody look bad, right? And it doesn't help you move forward as a team and organization. You need his teammates need to feel confident in him. The coaches need to feel confident. The fans need to feel confident in him. And if we're getting reports that he's throwing interceptions, that doesn't instill confidence in anybody.
Yeah, I actually think it's a higher level of expectation than a Tatum number 3 NBA pick. A franchise quarterback is evaluated everything they do. If you tweet, how is that tweet portrayed? Like what do you look
sign
like?
Sign a deal.
Right. Yeah. If you throw a pick, okay, we're analyzing that. We're also analyzing the reaction to throwing the pick and then what you said later about throwing the pick. Yeah. Like It's the most unique position there is.
That's why when I met a lot of just kind of people coming at me when I mentioned I thought the Joe Milton thing was probably a good idea. Part of it's just, you don't think the kid feels pressure after throwing 4 picks? Or you think he needs Joe Milton, talking about him maybe being better than him? There's plenty of pressure on Drake May to perform. And so
see if it cracks him or hardens him.
I hadn't even thought of that. What would be going on in town right now if Joe Milton were still here and Drake goes 4 of 8?
Well, and would we'd get the Joe Milton stats too? Right?
We would, and they might also include 3 interceptions. And no, he'd go 7 of 8. The conversation, but up next here on WEEI Afternoons, we got to talk about that crazy ending to Knicks Pacers last night. It was a 1 in 1,400 kind of game. 1 out of 1,400.
Epic.
Halliburton overrated ass. He is clutch for the Pacers. And why the Celtics should regret more than just losing to the Knicks. That's up next here on WEEI Afternoons.